Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yaki in Washington. Ahead, we hear from an NGO trying to help refugees in Serbia. An analyst talks with us about the various scenarios for the Syrian crisis. A U.S. presidential candidate admits to making a mistake. Britain's Queen Elizabeth becomes the nation's longest-serving monarch.
She has been there as a symbol of stability, but above all, of service.
And a Dutch-born pop singer releases her second single, coming up right here on The Voice of America. With the head of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, calling for the EU to admit some 160,000 refugees, with the bulk of them going to Germany, France, and Spain, the countries that serve as transit pathways to the European Union, many via Hungary, after crossing over from Serbia, are expecting even more refugees to pass through. International Edition's Jeffrey Young spoke with the head of one Serbian NGO that is working to assist these refugees with basic needs and other things. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Susan. Rado Jurovic is the executive director of the Serbian NGO Asylum Protection Center. He portrays the situation in his country as huge, with a government that is not financially or otherwise able to fully respond to the refugee waves moving on through Serbia to Hungary.
Asylum Protection Center is providing basic information to the refugees, providing legal aid and legal representation before the police and other institutions and courts, as well providing psychosocial support to the refugees, as well focusing on the children and the women and all those that are exhausted and in need. Moreover, our organization is providing humanitarian aid in the field across the whole Serbia, directing and focusing humanitarian aid, and they need some kind of protection. Our efforts are quite in the media as well, trying to raise awareness on this issue, as well as to prepare white public on what will come, because Serbia is quite unexperienced in the continental migration. For our society, it's really important to have the proper picture and the face of the problem and face of these refugees in need. White public in Serbia considers refugees from Syria as genuine refugees, comparing them with our previous refugee path from the 90s and all these problems we had as refugees from Yugoslavia. In that sense, we are also present near the Subotica region, which is the northern region on the Hungarian border, trying to provide information, trying to help people and assist, organize mobile teams in order to be in the field all the time. This is our focus with the groups of volunteers as well as professionals. We are trying to assist refugees that are really in need, and they are coming in big numbers in Serbia, trying mostly to cross over Serbia to a better life in the European Union.
As these refugees move across Serbia, they need food, they need water, they need basic sanitation. Some of them are sick. How can you help them?
We are getting humanitarian aid from the individuals and from the private corporations and trying to deliver them in the places where they are, providing them all basic hygiene, diapers, all what is needed for the babies, powders, and all other things that is needed. As well, we are trying to provide them clothes, warm clothes, especially because the weather circumstances are changing in Serbia nowadays. We are trying to assist people to go to the existing asylum camps in order to provide them proper accommodation there. But the problems are enormous, having in mind thousands of people are coming, and our assistance is just a drop in the sea of needs and the troubles. So for the serious and comprehensive support, for all those that are entering, only the state in its full capacity can assist at this point, but the state is moneyless and without the idea and inert to assist these people at least at this point.
That was the head of the Serbian NGO Asylum Protection Center, Rados Jurovic, describing how his group and others are trying to provide basic needs and other assistance to the massive wave of refugees moving through Serbia right now.
From what he says, the situation in Serbia sounds nearly overwhelming.
And for the time being, Susan, it will continue to be this big, if not bigger.
Well, we appreciate you following this story for us every day, Jeff.
Thank you, Susan.
Russian President Putin said his country is providing serious training and logistical support to the Syrian army, and the U.S. is revising its program for training moderate Syrian rebels. The UN is holding discussions with the Syrian opposition, as well as the Assad regime, trying to find common ground to launch a political solution to the conflict. And Iran is offering to talk about ways to end the conflict. International Edition's Mohammed El-Shenawy spoke to Paul Salem, vice president of the Middle East Institute, about different aspects of the Syrian crisis and different scenarios that could emerge. Mohammed, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sue.
Russian President Putin admitted that his country is providing serious training and logistical support to the Syrian army. How would that impact the conflict in Syria?
The Russian move, Sue, came few weeks after the U.S. and Turkey agreed to cooperate in creating a safe zone in northern Syria as a protected enclave for U.S.-trained Syrian opposition fighters. So, according to Paul Salem, the Russians responded with military support for their ally in Damascus.
I do think it's significant. I think its impact on the conflict in Syria will be real at the political level. It will also give a great boost of confidence to President Assad. Any idea that he would be willing to negotiate or leave power or give up much of his power, I think now is much more unlikely. We have the President of Russia effectively giving him a vote of confidence after meeting him personally. We also have the Iranian Foreign Minister Zarif saying that they stand with Assad as well. The Iranian position had been previously were with the Syrian state, that it wasn't anything specific about Mr. Assad or anybody else. So I think it makes the conflict much more prolonged, much more difficult to resolve.
But U.S. and Saudi Arabia are supporting an end to the Syrian conflict, but insist on Assad stepping down. Russia and Iran are rejecting such a condition. Is there any room for compromise?
Not really, Sue. It seems that Russian and Iranian positions have become more hard-line than before as Syrian rebels groups failed to exert enough pressure on the government to compromise. However, Paul Salem sees some potential light at the end of the tunnel.
Not in the short term, but one can never give up hope in the long term. The fact that all sides are talking about talking is a good thing. Right now, however, as we've been saying, the positions of the parties, especially regarding the position of Mr. Assad, are really very, very far apart. The only glimmer of hope might be if Iran and Russia over the next year gain more control inside Syria in regime-held areas. They might eventually have enough influence inside the regime to help engineer some kind of transition.
Paul Salem said that the current influx of Syrian refugees might give some sort of urgency to find a political solution to end the massive human suffering of the Syrian people.
Thank you, Mohammed, for this analysis.
Thank you, Sue, for having me.
Joining me here in the studio is reporter Andrew Palchevsky with a look at what is being said today in social media. Andrew, what's going on?
Well, the big event happening right now out in California is the Apple announcement. Apple does this every September. It's become kind of a big tech event where they announce the new products, new software, that kind of thing. So the rumors are that it's going to be iOS 9, the new operating system, and iPhone 6S, which I don't know if this is going to be a bigger version of the already large iPhone, but people are speculating about that. Interestingly, on Twitter, iOS 9 and iPhone 6S are two of the top trending topics worldwide. But Apple event is also the top trending topic, and it's because Apple has paid for it to be the top trending topic. So it's very interesting that you have three different topics about this event, and one of them is paid advertising. So it's a trend you're starting to see a lot, especially with big events like this, where companies will pay for a search term to pop up or pay for a term to be trending. So we'll see what comes of it. A lot of people speculating, a lot of people sure to react on social media, either with yays or nays, and okay. I'm sure we'll cover that tomorrow.
Okay, thanks a lot, Andrew.
Yeah.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
The history of Earth's mass extinctions includes events such as catastrophic meteorite strikes or supervolcanic eruptions. But according to a new study, the world's first mass extinction some 540 million years ago wasn't caused by a great calamity. It was brought on by evolution itself. Researchers studied the fossils of the world's first multicellular organisms called ediacarans. They found that these prehistoric creatures were made extinct by the appearance of more evolved organisms in what has become known as the Cambrian Explosion. These new life forms, acting as nature's ecological engineers, were able to change the environment to suit their own specific needs. These changes in the environment made it virtually impossible for the Ediacarans to survive, forcing them into extinction. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton has conceded that her use of a private email server when she was U.S. Secretary of State was a mistake. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone joins me here in the studio. Welcome, Jim.
Hi, Susan.
So what happened here?
Well, Hillary Clinton over the weeks has been moving closer and closer to acknowledging she made some mistakes about the use of the private email account and how she's been handling it, frankly, in the flurry of media inquiries. And now she said, actually, that, yes, it's time for her to apologize for it. She's been looking at the polls and seeing her support dip. She's seen Bernie Sanders surging. And she sees on the horizon a possible entry into the race by Vice President Joe Biden. So this is sort of part of a campaign reset by Hillary Clinton to appear more authentic in a year where voters seem to be demanding that from our politicians.
But it's never good when somebody running for the White House admits they make mistakes like this.
That's true. And we, of course, there's a history of this with the Clintons, both Bill and Hillary. So going way back, it's not that different from what we've seen in the past. But they're hoping to sort of stem the flow of blood here in the campaign and get her talking about issues like the Iran deal, like college education funding, things she wants to talk about. Because for the past few months, it's all have been about the email controversy, and that has cut into her image among voters in terms of trustworthiness and credibility, and that's something that's poisonous and they need to address as she moves ahead looking to the general election campaign in 2016.
Well, are the Republican candidates jumping on this admission like fleas on a dog?
Oh, yes, they are, and they want more, in fact. And don't forget, there are still questions that are going to be asked about the whole Benghazi attacks back in 2012, a special House committee looking at that. So the Republicans will have more opportunities to sort of grill Hillary Clinton about this. Right now, I think Clinton wants to sort of stabilize her image among Democrats. That's the key, so that she doesn't have to worry about a Sanders surge or Joe Biden coming in and trying to steal some thunder later in the campaign.
Well, we'll be watching the soap opera, Jim. Thanks for coming by.
You bet. Thanks, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, a milestone is reached in the British monarchy and the music of Natalie LaRose. Britain's 89-year-old Queen Elizabeth II has become the country's longest-serving monarch, surpassing her great-great-grandmother, Queen Victoria, by serving over 63 years on the throne. My colleague Victor Beattie is here with us with this story. Victor.
Fascinating story, Susan. David Flint, the national convener of Australians for a Constitutional Monarchy and a professor emeritus at the University of Technology in Sydney, told me that the Queen's longest reign is both a milestone and a significant achievement.
She has been there as a symbol of stability, but above all, of service. The whole theme of her reign has been service. When she turned 21, she announced to the Commonwealth from Cape Town in South Africa, she said, my whole life, whether it be long or short, will be dedicated to your service and the service of the great imperial family to which we all belong. And that has certainly been what she has done. It has been service.
It's interesting that you say that. Prime Minister David Cameron said over the last 63 years, Her Majesty has been a rock of stability in a world of constant change, and her selfless sense of service and duty has earned admiration not only in Britain but right across the globe.
I think that's very true, and she has inherited that in many ways by the teachings of her father. Her father, King George VI, was the king who remained in London during the war. And it was suggested at that time that the children, the young princesses, including the Queen, leave London and go to Canada. Many children were taken away from London. Most of them were sent to the country. But the Queen Mother said, the children won't go without me, and I won't go without the king, and the king will never leave London. And that was seen throughout the Commonwealth as a symbol of stability, that the king was rock solid on the question of courage and of staying with his people during the Nazi bombardment.
She was 25 years old when she ascended the throne February 6, 1952, following her father's death. How has she changed? How has the Commonwealth and Britain changed?
Well, Britain has certainly changed from being one of the big three, when being one of the powerful countries of the world. Britain has certainly not kept up with that. She's still a significant power, but she could never be linked with the United States and what was the Soviet Union, because that's disappeared too as one of the dominant powers of the world. But she is still an important power. But India is catching up within the Commonwealth. India is going to probably become a more important power than Britain. Britain still has a cultural and military significance. The Queen has remained consistent. She hasn't changed. Of course, she has aged, but she hasn't really in any significant way changed from what she decided she would do. And she takes her promise at Cape Town and her coronation oath very seriously. And she would never abdicate, absent, of course, some terrible illness or malady that meant that she couldn't function at all. But she takes the view that she is there for life. She made a promise to the people. She took an oath to God, and she intends to continue.
David Flynn says he expects when the Queen dies, there will be a renewed effort to finally end the monarchy that dates back to William the Conqueror in 1066. But he expects following a deep retrospective on the Queen, her life and times, the monarchy will endure. By the way, in 1999, 55% of Australians who cast ballots in a referendum opted to maintain their country's constitutional monarchy, keeping the Queen as head of state, not a president, despite strong political and media support for a republican form of government.
Thank you very much, Victor.
All right, Susan.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Janine Lanina is about to have surgery. She's having another baby by cesarean section. She's part of a study by London's Brunel University, where patients are listening to music before, during, and after surgery. Research shows that patients that do so have a lower level of pain, anxiety, and need for painkillers. Dr. Elizabeth Bell.
No doctor wants to cause pain, and so it's very nice to see that your patients are more relaxed.
Lanina chose relaxing classical music for her procedure.
I suppose it will be calm and slow.
Lanina used general anesthesia for her past C-sections, but this time, along with some pain relief, she'll be awake, listening to music through a small pillow speaker. The London researchers say it doesn't really matter what kind of music patients listen to, but it's important that it's music of their own choosing. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Dutch-born pop singer Natalie LaRose has released her second single, Around the World, where she teams with superstar Betty Wap. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA's Larry London about the single and about Natalie LaRose's career.
You might know her from her work with Flo Rida. Maybe you've seen her open for Fifth Harmony this summer. But Natalie LaRose is making her own mark in the music biz with her second single, Around the World. Larry, this single reminded me a lot of some of the stuff that Janet Jackson has done in the past.
That's true, very true. And Janet happens to be out with a new album and tour herself. But yes, Natalie LaRose, beautiful young lady. She's one of MTV's artists to watch. I had a chance to speak to her. She's a tall girl. She studied dance when she was young and growing up, and that was kind of the direction she started off on, but now she's kind of turned that into a music career, and during her concerts, she still does a lot of dancing. But she told me that growing up in Amsterdam, there just wasn't a demand for the kind of music she's known for performing, which is today's R&B hip-hop groove style.
And she moved to Los Angeles back in 2008. But it was an encounter with Flo Rida at the ESPYs that really set the world on fire.
She walked up to him and said, "My name's Natalie LaRose, and we have to work together." And believe it or not, he said, "Okay." And he took her on the road as a backup singer And then, before too long, she teamed up with Jeremiah on Somebody, which was a big hit for her this past year. And now she's coming out with the next single.
If I was your girl, if I was your girl, I'd give it to you all the time. If I was your girl, if I was your girl, I'd give it to you all the time.
And this single features Fetty Wap, who seems to be dominating the Billboard Hot 100. He's got like 3 songs in the top 20.
Trap Queen made him famous this past year, although he does have quite a few other songs. He's collaborating with a lot of other artists, but Natalie LaRose is very excited about the new collaboration with Fetty Wap, and it's called Around the World.
Now, the video for this, I know this is a radio show, but
close your eyes and imagine.
The video for this is kind of a setup like they're in some Caribbean bar because her parents are from Suriname.
Mm-hmm.
Which is in the, I guess it was called the Dutch West Indies or something.
Right.
But they're in this kind of bar, and some guy drops his passport, because he wants to kind of talk to her or whatever. And then the dance numbers is what really reminded me of Janet Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really tight choreography, really snappy, popping and locking, but also singing at the same time. And then, of course, Fetty Wap comes in with the rap. So,
and she's absolutely beautiful, too. And her early days was on stage doing theater production. She recalled to me a story of starring in one of the lead roles in High School Musical back at home in Amsterdam, which is kind of interesting.
If you have any comments about Natalie LaRose or her new single, Around the World, you can send them to Larry on Twitter. He is at @VOA_music. You can also listen for Larry's program, Border Crossings. That's on our website, voanews.com.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In September 2000, the 189 United Nations member states of the time and 23 international organizations set a lofty goal to work together in an effort to relieve poverty, hunger, disease, and lack of access to basic education and clean drinking water by 2015. The 8 areas targeted for improvement were collectively named the Millennium Development Goals, or MDGs. Many of the goals set 15 years ago have been attained, or nearly so. In this regard, a major achievement of the MDGs has been reducing the number of those living in extreme poverty by 50%. And yet, progress has been uneven, particularly for women and girls. Today, a wide employment gender gap persists. Despite significant advances, especially in primary education, girls are more likely to be out of school than boys at all levels, with the gender gap in school attendance widening at lower secondary education. And at the slow pace women are attaining seats in elected government bodies, it will take nearly 40 years to reach parity in parliaments. On the specific MDGs, progress has been slowest on issues of women's and girls' health and well-being, said Ambassador Richard Erdman, acting U.S. representative to the UN Economic and Social Council. Among all of the MDGs, progress on reducing maternal mortality and providing universal access to reproductive health lags furthest behind. The United States firmly believes that the United Nations 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, which will be adopted in September, must place the needs of women and girls at the center of sustainable development. To fulfill our new 2030 Development Agenda, we must recognize the vital role that sexual and reproductive health care services play in ensuring healthy lives and eradicating poverty, said Ambassador Erdman. Enlightened policies on sexual and reproductive health and effective programs are a matter of life and death for millions of women and girls around the world. it's clear we need strong global leadership to continue making progress.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.